I would say like the evolution of spiritual pursuit and the evolution of spiritual practice and movements. Part of their trajectory was to somehow remove yourself from the world, to transcend, right? And what we learn as you move along is that that's not the point at all. We're here to have a human experience. So it's really not about escaping, right? I think you want to transcend the limitations of the ego and the human bullshit, right? Particularly speaking to entrepreneurs and business people, you know, you could approach your life from how much you can get in a lifetime for yourself, or you can look at how much you can enjoy the human experience and also making sure that you're improving life for everyone else and the species moving forward.
Nice to have you here, Tony Moss.
Thank you. Good to be here. Yeah.
Welcome to the Natural Biohacker Podcast. This is the name of the podcast.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Trying to combine nature, artificial intelligence.
Perfect.
And, yeah, everything we have today. And I think it's similar to your work as well. But maybe you can just, give us a little deep dive in your work.
Well, predominantly, I'm a singer, songwriter, and a recording artist. And I'm the creative director of a medicine music label called I Am Life. But I also do a lot of event production, particularly in California. And a lot of our work is similar. It's about combining ancient indigenous technologies of transformation with contemporary and modern understandings about spirituality and transformation and technology. Yeah, and bringing the two together.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love this work. And last year, I've been here in Koh Phangan, met you for the first time, and I was just amazed from the being and from your music. I just talked to my friend Nadia. You know, you
also. Oh, yeah, of course.
And she said you are like the embodiment of love.
So
also in your
On good days. On good days.
How is it on bad days?
More neutral, you know? Kind of jumping into what we're talking about, I was just telling someone that one of the challenges of bringing spiritual work into your life is that you're also opening yourself up to the world. So for me, there's always a duality. On one hand, I'm always filled with optimism and possibility, you know, and love, you know, and at the same time, I'm very sensitive to the shadow of humanity as well. You know, so on a daily basis, you're also feeling confrontations happening in the world. And, you know, I'm doing lots of one-on-one conversations and counseling with people, you know, and some days you just don't feel like getting out of bed like anybody else. You know, I do, but there are days when, like anyone else, you just want to take a vacation, right? And not let the world in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, even on those days, I'm sure compared to most people, I'm still interacting with the world from a very loving place. But at the same time, it's like boundaries. You know?
Yeah, I can feel that also when you're talking. It's not just like a high vibe and we go into other realms. It's
right.
Also to be here on this earth, on this ground, and to connect.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think looking at, again, this concept of, I would say like the evolution of spiritual pursuit and the evolution of spiritual practice. Throughout the history of humanity, a lot of different spiritual groups, we'll just call it, and movements, part of their trajectory was to somehow remove yourself from the world, to transcend, right? And what we learn as you move along is that that's not the point at all. We're here to have a human experience. So it's really not about escaping, right? I think you want to transcend the limitations of the ego and the human bullshit, right? But it's really about being firmly rooted on the planet and making the most of a human incarnation. So I really focus on that, you know? It's more about how to make the best of and participate in the human experience than it is trying to, you know, get away. I always say, you know, death is waiting for everybody. You're going to be out of here soon enough, right? Why rush it?
Yeah, just enjoy it. Yeah. And this is what your music is about. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, this combination of I think looking at what it is that we can learn from our ancestors, learn from the history of humanity on the planet, you know, but the whole point of that is to, in a lot of ways, just be better humans, you know? To learn from the past. And, you know, this idea, like we get from the Native Americans, particularly about seven generations, you know, particularly speaking to entrepreneurs and business people, you know, you could approach your life from how much you can get in a lifetime for yourself, or you can look at how much you can enjoy the human experience and also making sure that you're improving life for everyone else and the species moving forward. I often say, you know, it's really about moving from a personal egoic consciousness into species consciousness, you know, like, which is what I think the world is moving to, albeit being dragged, kicking and screaming, right? Yeah, we look at what's happening in the world, and clearly, with all the confrontation still taking place, the central lesson is, like, you know, when we stop being so concerned with our particular family, culture, you know, national identity, when we can start to ease that and start thinking more in terms of, like, what would be best for the entire species, then I think life's going to take off. So I always feel like I'm on that team.
Yeah, it's a little bit between egocentric and cosmocentric.
Here. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, because it's true. You do have to focus on yourself, of course, right? And I think it's natural to, in any confrontation or dangerous situation, the first thing you're going to think about is your family. You know, that's natural. Yeah. But just as a way of being on the planet, I think you're always thinking about, or can be thinking about, you know, what is best for humanity as a whole. And we're at a point now where we kind of have to think about that, because for the first time in history, we have the ability to destroy life on the planet if we chose to. Yeah.
Also talking about the wars, which are just happening right at the moment. People are getting killed. And
as we're talking,
okay.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was talking about earlier about I think my approach to life in general is always coming from a place of love and compassion. But like anyone else, you're watching the news and now you're aware that as we're, you know, on this beautiful island, having a beautiful experience, doing ceremony together, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of people that are struggling, you know, and as you said, you know, pain and suffering and dying as we speak. And you learn to walk with that duality at all times, you know. You're keeping that in mind as you're planning your next business venture.
Right? Yeah, it's also interesting to observe that here on the island, because we also work with a lot of people here. And some people that are not happy, but they have everything.
Exactly.
They have everything. They have the ocean, they have the jungle, they have good people, good restaurants, ceremonies, everything, workshops. Yeah. But still, there's something that they say, no, it's not right, or it's not, I'm not happy with this, I'm not content.
Yeah, you know, it's been a lifelong fascination for me. You know, I grew up with, my mother was a singer also, and she was also a backup singer for other, you know, singers. So I grew up in a very poor neighborhood in the Bay Area in Northern California. And at the same time, we would be on the weekend at a mansion. You know, she was meeting artists that we were recording with. And the thing I noticed, even at a very young age, although I didn't have language for it, was the people that I knew and I met that were happiest were the people that were living in my poor neighborhood. All the very wealthy people we visited were miserable. Yeah. Without any fail, right? Miserable in this sense of, like you said, not being satisfied. That whatever it is they had or had created was not enough, right? And the tools weren't available, at least to them at the time, to figure out what was this thing inside that was empty and not being fulfilled.
So you think it's the natural cycle, just maybe for entrepreneurs now speaking, that they build a business, they raise money, they have maybe, dive into the materialistic world. And then at one point they know, okay, there is more to that.
Yeah,
there's also a spirit inside, a soul inside, but I can't even communicate with it.
Yeah. I mean, my experience has been that, well, I find two things. One is people that pursue a lot of goals, whether it's making money or building a business, and the reason they're doing it is just because it's fun and they feel that if they get to this particular goal, then there will be this feeling of I have made it, right? And that then I will feel good and like I will make an accomplishment. So there's that group of people. And then they're, you know, and they discover at the end that, oh, this actually isn't that fulfilling. So I have to do the next big thing and keep going. Yeah. And then there are people, I think, who are just driven by greed and acquisition, who also think, you know, that if I can, yeah, just achieve all of my goals, make a lot of money, look successful in the eyes of other people, that somehow that will feel like I have made it, right? Both categories, they discover, like, you get to that point and you're still empty. And then always the question is this it? You know, like, yeah, and what's next? Yeah. The vet, so as you know, I also lead ceremonies with plant medicine, ayahuasca, and a very large amount of people that come to ceremony are in that category. You know, they're people that have what the rest of the world would think of as success, you know? Yeah, I know for a fact that most of the people when I travel think that if they had the life that these people had, then that would be it. They could relax and life would be good. And I can tell them from experience, it's not true. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You might have a better house, but it's still you.
Yeah. I observe this so much also with the people who we work together. And it seems like this cycle. Yeah. Just, okay, now I have the money. I have the house. I have the nice wife and everything.
Yeah.
But it's just like this emptiness inside. And they don't know how to approach it because they don't have like this spiritual background, maybe also, and the nature background.
Yeah. What I find is like, even if you were to eliminate the words like spiritual, what I find over the years mostly is that at the core of most of the world's confrontations and this emptiness that people feel is actually just a lack of connection, right? They've lost a sense of connection with nature, other people, the cosmos, you know? So they don't realize that's the thing they're actually trying to fill. That's the emptiness, it's the hole, right? And nothing in the material world is going to fill that for you. Yeah. Yeah. And at some point, you know, if they're lucky, they hear about these different technologies of transformation, spiritual practices, ayahuasca, whatever it is, you know. Because that's why I think it doesn't really matter, right, what gets you in the door, right?
Yeah.
Right. As long as at some point that aching feeling inside has to get loud enough for you to do something about it, right? But in the end, what most people tell me is the thing that they're most missing actually is just feeling connected, right? It's really what everybody wants. They don't realize it, you know? I think a lot of people want safety, right? They think, well, I'll get a lot of money, then I can have a big, beautiful house and a car, and I can feel safe from all the craziness in the world. It's not enough, right? Because right on the other side of that is, now that I have separated myself from the world, I want to connect with the world.
Right? Yeah. It's the human game. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, speaking about that, how was your past? You said you have experience with plant medicine over more than 3 decades, I think.
Yeah, so yeah.
What was the Tony before this 30 years like?
Yeah, it's funny. I was asking myself this question just the other day. Well, because every now and then, you know, you can stop and maybe see yourself through the eyes of other people, right? Yeah, and I was thinking how unlikely it was, given how I grew up, that I would end up, you know, where I am today. But, I was raised in a Southern Baptist religion, church, Christian, on my mother's side. And my father's side of the family were Catholic. And they were right across the bridge from each other, San Francisco and Oakland. So on any given Sunday, I could be in a, you know, very energetic gospel music, you know, spiritual ceremony. And then later that same Sunday, we could be at the Catholic Church on our knees, you know, in Latin music, you know, beautiful chanting. And as a young kid, I wasn't interested in the teachings and the doctrine of the churches. It was, you know, you're young, it's over my head. But I did notice that whether it was very energetic gospel music or it was Catholic prayers and chants, both still moved me, right? Something about that. So I had this kind of spiritual foundation really, very early on, but also a complete rejection of religion itself, you know, control and teachings and, yeah, so somewhere around, so I did musical, so family full of singers,
yeah,
right? So music was always there. And then I was kind of studying music as a kid. I wasn't sure I wanted to do that. And then in high school, I discovered drama for the first time. I started studying acting. Right out of high school, I got my first job at Disneyland in Anaheim, in California. Yeah. And because of that, I started studying dance, and I discovered that I was very talented. You know, my teachers were like, oh, you could actually dance, right? Well, because by then I had studied acting, so I was what they call the triple threat. I could sing, dance, and act. So I started working the next year, and I did musical theater professionally for about 10 years. Yeah. Yeah. So at the end of that, just what we're talking about, I remember thinking, this is it. My life is going to be me, you know, getting in a hit Broadway show, and I'm going to win a Tony Award. Very funny. And I was only interested in, you know, a career and being very successful and being a celebrity. And wouldn't you know, right at the moment when all that could happen, that thing we're talking about happened, I started realizing that I was actually very empty. And I became aware that I was no longer satisfied by the applause. And early on in that career, when the show would end and you'd go out afterwards and all the people would be waiting, you know, and there was this really high feeling, you know, getting a lot of attention, the opposite started happening. The show would end and I would like find a way to get out of the theater without meeting all these people because it was no longer satisfying to me. So that opened up into just this spiritual search. I didn't know at the time that's what it was, but it was. Yeah, so I was studying lots of different spiritual traditions and religions and everything from, you know, Buddhism, and every Sunday we were going to the Christian temple and studying Eastern philosophy, and, you know, and then even getting a little bit into quantum physics and philosophy. And then this one year I was running a coffee house, all organic coffee house in Southern California, and a friend came in and said, hey, we're doing an ayahuasca ceremony this weekend. Do you want to come? I had no idea what it was. But, you know, I was just very open and I trusted him. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll go. I didn't know what I was doing. So it turned out it was the Santo Daime Church, which was a Judeo-Christian ayahuasca church out of Brazil. And I hated every minute of it, you know, nothing, because there was no orientation. I didn't know what I was saying yes to. And I pretty much wanted that to be over. And when it was over, I said, man, okay, that was interesting. I'm never doing that shit again. Never. Well, wouldn't you know, the week later, the phone rang and said, hey, there's going to be another ceremony. I'm like, okay, I'll go. Yeah. And the reason was, which I tell people about all the time, it's not so much what you get in a ceremony. It's the integration afterwards. I noticed the week after the ceremony that something has shifted in my consciousness. I wasn't sure what it was, but it was good. Right? Yeah. I felt this sense of connection to God or the universe, and it was new. Yeah, and it was good. And I kind of felt like, okay, I want to go see what this thing is about. And this time it won't freak me out because I know what I'm doing. So that was now 30 years ago.
Yeah. It reminds me of my ayahuasca ceremony as well. It was not with the Santo Daime, but yeah, it was back in Switzerland.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like not like a traditional shamanic thing. Maybe I don't want to do it again like this,
right,
time. But it was good at this point in my life. And I'm also remembering like, going to my old job again, and then I felt this connection to nature and also to universe.
Exactly.
And I felt, okay, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's all about the integration. So many people, they think, okay, I go to a ceremony and it solves all my problems.
Right.
But it's about what happens afterwards.
Yeah, it is all about what happens afterwards. And, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of information. So this is pre-internet. You know, I mean, people were on the internet, but not everybody was. I wasn't. It existed, but I wasn't paying attention. And, you know, it was early stages. So there was no Google at the time. So a lot of people would go into those shamanic experiences without a clear intention, right? Because you really didn't know it was possible. That has completely changed. Now, every time somebody comes to a ceremony, you know, they've done their research. They really understand what they're doing there. You know, they have very strong intentions. They understand integration. So it is exponentially like become more effective for a lot of people. Yeah, you know, a lot of people come in just in one weekend. I mean, they know they're not going to get all their problems solved in one weekend. And they kind of understand that it's more about the integration. Yeah, but back then we were kind of like just on our own figuring it out.
Yeah. Okay. And then what happens afterwards? So you work with ayahuasca and you go like really more into it,
yeah.
And you tried out different traditions as well in ayahuasca.
Yeah, when I was introduced to the Santo Daime, I didn't know that it was. I understood the concept of shamanism, you know, like anybody growing up in the U.S., particularly in California, but ayahuasca was new. My introduction was through the Santo Daime Church, and I wasn't all that aware of the roots of it and where it came from. So I was with the Santo Daime for maybe a couple of years, and what happened was a mestizo curandero shaman, Don Jose Campos, who is now famous, but he wasn't then.
I read a book. I read a book right now, The Shaman and Ayahuasca. Interesting.
Yeah, so at the time he was not well known because the popularity wasn't there. But he was coming, and a friend basically recommended me to be his sitter, like the helper for the ceremony. So that was my introduction to the world of ayahuasca outside of the Santo Daime. And big contrast. Right. And I knew right away, like, wow, like, I want to know more about this. So that eventually I studied with the Shipibo, the Yawanawa, traveling back and forth. I went to Ecuador and studied with the Asekupai there. All over, different groups doing different styles of work. And meanwhile, while all that was happening, ayahuasca was growing in popularity in the United States, well, all over the world. So I was also starting to meet lots of different traveling people, which is doing what we call the neo-shamanic tradition, new shamanic. Yeah, and probably, I think maybe 10, 12 years into that experience, I was given the opportunity to lead a church, a Santo Daime church. And I wasn't interested in that initially, but the community wanted it to happen, and I was kind of the logical choice. But that was my introduction, and I discovered right away that it was natural for me to be able to hold that space. So while I think I did that maybe 2 or 3 years, and in the process of that, started to get visions and understandings about what I felt like a neo-shamanic ayahuasca tradition could look like in the United States. So my friend Sunny and I decided, okay, we're going to start doing this different thing. And that eventually became the format that we use today. And I've been doing that now for like 15 years.
For me, before I sit with you in ceremony, it was like we had the tradition of sheep people, sheep people shamans back in Switzerland initiated. And it was like really clear, like nights out and just empty your bucket by yourself and everything like that. And then before the first new shamanic ceremony with you guys, so I was like, is this the thing? I don't know.
Right.
Because I know like the shamanic work or the indigenous work. But yeah, I'm completely blown away. So also with the music, with the different styles of music you use. And
You know, I am they call it an autodidact. Like I'm self-taught. Because I was, the first year I entered college, I kept getting work professionally. So each time I would start my studies, you know, a show would come along, the theatrical thing, and I would have to leave and focus. And then eventually a friend said, why are you going to school to get a degree in theater? You're doing it already. And I thought, well, because I like being in school. But I thought, well, he's also right. So I dropped out of school. That was the best decision I made because it taught me that anything I wanted to learn, I could learn on my own. Right? I didn't actually require a degree and just a 4-year period of academic study. So anything I was interested in, I would just take on and learn. So yeah, once I became aware of what shamanism was, I studied everything from the origins of theater, which overlaps into ceremony, the first rituals that most people don't know, theater actually comes from ritual. The first theater was basically taking what was happening in the ritual ceremony setting and just kind of expanding it, right? Yeah, so I realized like, oh, I've been involved in this tradition in different ways. I just didn't know. And then the interesting thing was during the first probably 5 or 6 years of leading ceremony, I started to become aware that a lot of the things that the Shipibo and other indigenous people were teaching me was now mainstream, like scientific research and understanding and language, things like, you know, like epigenetics, you know, and neuroplasticity, you know, all of these terms that were starting to surface with new understandings of, I realize, wow, this is exactly what we're doing in ceremony. We just didn't have Western language for understanding the process. So once I understood that and started studying it, including the power of sound and music for healing, I just combined all of that, and that's what became the bird tribe ceremonies.
Yeah,
so that's why the music plays such an important role in the ceremony. I'm very aware of the role that the music is playing, including the lyrics, you know, everything from the drumming to the sounds, where they're happening, when, the effects they're having on the nervous system, the way that they can, I say, bypass the intellect so that you can get at the things that are hidden. Right?
Yeah. I just had a podcast talk like a few months ago with my friend Stefan Key. Maybe you know him.
No, I don't think so.
He's also a music producer.
Oh, yeah.
That's music.
Great.
And yeah, we talked about the same thing. And
yeah.
I will definitely go in this direction in a moment.
Yeah.
But then before, I wanted to know about shamanism, more about shamanism, because there's a lot of prejudices. There's a lot of misunderstanding.
Very much so.
And you seem to be well known and have a lot of experience. So what is shamanism for you?
Yeah, the first thing I'll say about that is occasionally someone will meet me for the first time and they'll say something like, oh, are you going to be our shaman? And I'm not a shaman. Right? Yeah. And so it's interesting. The West uses the word shaman to refer to indigenous ayahuasqueros. They don't use that word.
Yeah.
They accept it now because they understand what we mean by it. But most people know now that shamanism actually, the term is from like Siberia, you know, like...
Yeah.
Right. The basic definition of a shaman in any culture is one who is familiar with the underworld, other dimensions, knows how to travel there and come back. Mm-hmm. Right. They can take people into journeys there or go into these places themselves and return. So that's not what I'm doing. Right. I'm not interested in that per se. I'm fascinated by it, but it's not a pursuit. So what the indigenous people, at least in South America, would actually say is a curandero or a curandera, which is like a healer, right? So I'm also not focused on the healing arts. I would simply say that I am a facilitator of ayahuasca ceremonies and have a lot of experience doing it. And when people use those terms, I respond to it because I know what they mean when they say it. But I make it clear to them, like, no, I'm just your facilitator for the night, right? So that's really what a shaman would be. It's somebody that, you know, traditionally knows how to move into altered states of consciousness with or without medicine, right? And can take you into these places and also return, right? The curanderos are mostly people that have studied all the different plants. They understand the whole pharmacy of the jungle. So they can actually, you know, sit with you and in ceremony or not, figure out, okay, you're having this issue. We're going to tink these plants over this period of time. And then in ceremony, they can chant to you and help move energy around. So traditionally, that's what an ayahuasquero would be doing. In the more neo-shamanic tradition, I've done dietas, you know, I understand that realm, but I knew that for the Western shamanic, neo-shamanic tradition, that wasn't going to be necessary. Mm-hmm. For somebody that wants to delve into that, they should and can go to South America and study with somebody who specializes in that. But for what most people are wanting in the West, it's more what we call like a psychotherapeutic, you know, cathartic experience, which ayahuasca is beautiful for. And that automatically is going to be a spiritual experience. I decided just to focus on that because that's really what Western people are coming for, actually. And they don't really resonate with a lot of the shamanic language and tradition anyway.
Yeah. It's too much for them. So also
it is.
And this leads me to my second question. Why ayahuasca? There are so many medicines also, like psilocybin getting more and more into the mainstream, and Wachuma, the Onikakti and everything. So why you focus on ayahuasca?
Because it called me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good next.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, that really is a short answer. I got introduced to all of them. I've tried all of them, had beautiful experiences with each, but it's like a marriage, you know? I understand ayahuasca. It feels like it understands me. And when there's just this perfect harmony, And when I'm in that space, it's like home. It's very familiar for me, and I understand it and know how to navigate it.
Yeah. And what do you think is the journey of ayahuasca now in the future? Because we are in this psychedelic renaissance right now, and there's also this called third wave.
Right.
We need to be a little bit unconscious about what happens,
right,
because there's also like a lot of charlatans, a lot of people
absolutely
like misusing this place.
Yeah.
And so what's your intention?
You know, I tend to feel, if I'm looking at history, I think we are just in a particular phase of this quote unquote ayahuasca, well, psychedelic renaissance. Right now we're in the phase of plant medicines and psychedelics meets capitalism, right? Really.
Yeah.
And the culture, the consciousness around it, mm-hmm, right? There are a percentage of people who definitely recognize the healing potential and feel called to want to bring it to people. There's also as many people that are recognizing the financial possibilities, the control around that, and also just a lot of ego, which is natural. A lot of people just, they recognize the value of the healer, and they want to be it. I want to be the one leading the ceremony. I want to be the one that gets the attention. I just feel like we just kind of have to go through that phase. But in the end, you know, the medicine's been here longer than we have. I think it's going to outlive us for sure. I think once the hype is over, you know, and the kind of pop culture popularity kind of simmers down, you're still going to have a lot of people that recognize the absolute healing and transformative value of the medicine. It's still going to be there.
Yeah. So you're basically saying, so the spirit of ayahuasca is also like working through this?
People use this term a lot. And I always avoid what we call woo-woo language when speaking to Western people, but mainly because we don't have very developed language in the West for spiritual concepts. So they land on Western people like, you know, if you're talking about, right? But at the same time, yes, there seems to be this profound, almost like intelligence working through this psychedelic renaissance, you know, particularly with ayahuasca and plant medicines. Cross-culturally, all over the world, people will share with me, and I read different accounts of them feeling like when they drink ayahuasca, you know, or take mushrooms or peyote, any of those things, it's almost like the planet itself is able to communicate with them more directly. And in that, there is always these very intelligent messages that the plants know what they're doing. So when I look at humanity, we're at this like, you know, critical point where we could either move the whole species towards healing or run off the edge of a cliff, right? And, it does feel really kind of beautifully, the timing of the popularity of things like ayahuasca right at this moment when technology also could like take us over the edge. I find it fascinating that the two are rising at the same time. You know, on one hand, you've got like, you know, we're concerned about AI, right? Yeah. And here at the same time, we have this amazing organic intelligence that's coming up. Right? Yeah, and a lot of people, which I really love, are combining both, you know, like you're talking this hacking, which is beautiful.
Yeah. I just said one of my guests last time on the podcast, Timo Arina. He's like a big biohacker from Finland.
Ah, great.
And yeah, he's also known for combining natural and artificial
intelligence. Right.
And I think this is the way to go, because also the artificial intelligence
Absolutely. Is
a little bit natural, no?
Yeah.
It comes from the nature.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing, you know. There's this concept of the eagle and the condor prophecy you probably heard. And for people that don't know, the very simple version of that is that some 500 years ago, indigenous people all over the world started to receive messages that there was a tough time coming. They basically saw the colonization and the genocides. And their spiritual leaders and shamans said things like, well, don't worry, this is going to be a really, really tough time. But in about 500 years, the eagle and the condor will fly together again. What they were referring to was that there would be this split in the Americas, South and North America. But they made it clear what they were really referring to was that there would be a separation of the heart and the mind. So the condor represents South America, the way of femininity, intuition, and the heart. And the eagle represents North America, which is the way of masculinity, technology, and the mind. Right. And that they say it was probably necessary for the two to kind of split and go on their own courses. But for humanity to move forward, the two have to come together. That's exactly what your friend is talking about. You know, it's like the only way for humanity to move forward is to bring together the best of indigenous understanding and wisdom and cosmology with what we now understand with Western mind, technology, science, you know, modern understandings of the world. If so, basically, yeah, we bring the heart and the mind together, and that's how we move forward. So I feel like that's what I'm mostly committed to. Through this work, I'm holding down the heart space, right? Yeah. But also very aware, I'm not anti-technology at all. We absolutely need technology to move forward. It's our natural evolution, of course, right? Yeah, so but how we bring them together harmoniously so that the two can fly, yeah, that's where I feel like I'm mostly centered and focused on.
Yeah. And the U.S. right now. Yeah. You bring a lot of medicine work also to them, and also through your music, the medicine.
Yeah, mostly through music there. Yeah. Because it's still illegal there.
And how is it from your perspective? Where is the U.S. right now? Because there's a lot of things going on, like wars they're participating in. And
so, yeah, internal war. Yeah. So there's a, which people have heard about, what's happening right now in the U.S., in addition to the psychedelic renaissance, in the way that that meets capitalism, and I don't mean necessarily, there are some negative aspects, but basically through organizations like MAPS, the benefits of psychedelics is now fairly common knowledge in the United States. Most people understand now that it's not just tripping that hippies are doing. They really get that a lot of people are benefiting from MDMA therapy, psilocybin, you know, gosh, there's so many now that to some degree, mescaline, although that's not in clinical trials, ketamine, of course, you know, cannabis being slowly decriminalized and moved back into right relationship. So I feel like what we're seeing in the U.S. is psychedelics and plant medicines are just finding their equilibrium within our culture. So we're not, it hasn't landed yet, but more and more people that I talk to and more, you know, because of people like Michael Pollan, because he's a mainstream author, he's loved by a lot of people. You know, when he released that book, How to Change Your Mind, you know, and then the Netflix series around it, a lot of people that wouldn't ordinarily pay attention suddenly are like, oh, wow, I'm completely recognizing what my daughter or son have been telling me about. Like, and we've had a lot of parents of young people that I've worked with over the years contacting me saying, I think I'm interested in that ayahuasca now, right? Yeah, now they get that it's not just a crazy thing that their kids are doing that they should be concerned about. Right? They're seeing that their kids are actually transforming and growing and healing in a lot of ways. So I think what's happening in the U.S. is, on one hand, there's a beautiful maturity happening with the understanding about these substances. And at the same time, it's the wild, wild west, right? Like, which is what the U.S. always is known for. There's also a lot of people lining up to figure out how they can position themselves in the marketplace around all of this and take advantage of it. And because of that, there's also the backlash, you know. There's a lot of people that are still concerned. The DEA, on one hand, they're understanding there's no reason in pursuing these natural or psychedelic substances, you know, because really the drug problem in the United States is an opioid epidemic. You know, they're realizing like cannabis and mushrooms, like this is not our problem. Yeah. You know, big pharma is our problem and addiction, right? Yeah. Yeah. So I think the U.S. is at a just a, it's right at the point of needing to figure out what it all is, but it's not necessarily any more negative than it's ever been. If anything, I think it's finding more and more acceptance.
Okay. And also talking about the entrepreneurship, and because we also talk a lot about the work with ayahuasca since a decade right now, and other medicinal plants, but also shamanism,
right?
And you think, for sure, you think that entrepreneurs can benefit from that also, to fill this emptiness inside and to feel actually more fulfilled and just pursuing it.
And I think it also, it will affect the type of decisions and choices they're making as entrepreneurs. You know, I've done ceremonies for, you know, that I've had to sign NDAs for, you know, people that definitely don't want the world to know that they're working with plant medicine. And positively, they have told me that it doesn't make them want to like quit their job and stop making millions of dollars, but they become way more conscious of their impact. Mm-hmm. And they open up to other possibilities of how to do business, how to achieve their goals, right? While at the same time being much more sensitive to how they're affecting the environment and other people. Mm-hmm. So this is really beautiful, you know, for sure. Yeah. And yeah, they realize like, oh, this is that thing that's been empty inside, like the whole reason I'm here tonight, right? Yeah. And they realize that how they're being in the planet is part of it, actually.
Yeah. And also healing their relationships with their families and
everything. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's also a lot of proving.
Oh, yes.
So I know it for myself, also a lot of proving for others. Okay, I'm successful. Here you are. And yeah, to get rid of that and just to heal this family wounds, ancestral wounds as well.
Yeah, the ancestral piece is huge, you know. And when people hear that, I have to speak to that a little bit, you know, I think they're thinking ancestral wounds or doing ancestral work is like, oh, your actual ancestors show up in the ceremony. Like, well, sometimes they do. What we're really talking about is what we now have a scientifically proven fact that each of us carry our ancestors in our DNA. So all the traumas, you know, and mostly that, but the traumas and the impacts of your ancestral experience, we carry with us, including the baggage and the shit, right? Just the conditioning, right, that gets passed on. So these cycles just keep continuing. Through this plant medicine work, that can be arrested. Like, suddenly you realize how much of who you are is a result of your ancestral lineage. And one of the messages people often get, I usually say that you can heal your ancestral lineage forwards and backwards. What I mean is, by recognizing what part of your behavior, what part of how you show up is connected to your ancestors, particularly the baggage, right? You heal that in your lifetime and then it doesn't go forward. So you're also healing future generations. You're sparing them, right? All of your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's dive a little bit. It's going a little bit in the direction of music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this is what you're known for.
Yep, predominantly, yeah.
Yeah. And I just love your music. You just gave us a small peek into your new
album.
I think it was the day before yesterday.
Yeah.
And yeah, just explain a little bit for the audience how you use music mm-hmm. for yourself and also like you use it for ceremony and for the connection, which we just talked about.
Yeah, I'm definitely one of the people that says publicly, ayahuasca is not for everybody. Mm. You know, like a lot of people that do healing work feel that everybody who has any problems should come to a ceremony. Like, and that's not true. If you feel really called, yeah, there's a percentage of the population that would benefit greatly from ceremony. However, one of the most powerful aspects of the ceremony is the music. You know, and we call it medicine music because it's being used as medicine. So now there's a whole genre of music called medicine music, and that's mostly referring to music that is played in ceremony or it's created from ceremony, right? But it lives in this space. And naturally, in the modern world, all this music is being recorded. So now there's a whole genre of music called medicine music. So I started realizing, like, wow, this music is so powerful in ceremony. Can it be as powerful outside of ceremony? So when I first started recording, it was kind of an experiment. You know, I wondered if I could do very produced versions of the music, well-produced and, you know, like anything else, and would the medicine of the music stay intact? Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so I released the first three songs as the most popular, Grateful, and literally every week, someone's writing me saying, oh, you don't know me. I don't know who you are, but I stumbled across this song on YouTube and now I listen to Grateful every morning and it's helped me move through my grief it's helped me transform and move out of my depression. So I realized like, wow, this is actually working, you know.
Actually, tears from that.
I
love this song.
Yeah, well, Grateful is, that's a special gift, you know. Once in a lifetime, a song like that comes along, you know. And it was born from my own wanting to process grief. So then I started to really realize the power of the medicine music as an extension of the ceremony work. So I just started focusing on it. And by then I had done a lot of research on the power of music and sound and as a healing modality and as a therapy, you know. So I have this wonderful producer, Jonathan Akakian, and you know, we went into the studio and I produced our first album myself, Birds in Paradise, which most people know me from. That's through under the group name of Bird Tribe. We're like an artist collective. So we released that. It's doing beautifully well. And I'm actually surprised, right? Because we weren't involved in the music industry at all at the time. So, you know, we didn't have like marketing or promoting, and this none of that was on our radar. We just put it up because we wanted the medicine people to have it. Yeah. And so it took off. So it's been, relative to that, it's been extremely successful. Then what I wanted to do with a new album, which is called Joy, I was talking to someone about medicine music, and I said that, well, any music that meets you at the right moment in your life and it helps you process something, or if that music in that moment is medicine for you, then it's medicine music. So I thought, I was looking back, I thought, well, at different times in my life, gospel music was medicine music. You know, there's a moment when rock music was that, musical theater, because I did that, you know, and I was really interested in, when I was a teenager, the Parliament Funkadelic, you know, and this wild, like, Afro psychedelic music. So with Joy, I thought, I want to honor each of the genres of music that were important to me growing up, but take the medicine music into that genre. So that's how Joy was born. So the album covers everything from like R&B to like a big band sounding piece of music. Some of the things that are similar to what we hear on like the Birds in Paradise album, there's like a funk and soul esque kind of, yeah. Yeah, so you got to hear the whole thing, and I'm pretty confident at this point that it doesn't matter what genre we're moving into, as long as my intent is that it's medicine, it still lands that way. And so far, the feedback has been that. Yeah, it's been really positive.
Yeah. I'm super grateful for your songs as well. We also use it in our breathwork ceremonies.
Oh, great. Nice.
And always when I just like play grateful, I mean, I need to cry, but everything else needs to cry.
Yeah, that song is really interesting. Yeah, a friend wrote me like a while back, and he loved the song, but he wasn't aware how popular it had gotten. So I get this message from him one morning. It was a text, and he said, "Dude, I'm at a 3-day Joe Dispenza workshop. There's 3,000 people here, and the first day we all got together, they played Grateful." Wow. Yeah, and you know, for me, I was like, I mean, I knew the song was like being played, but it was just fun to know that for the first time, he was really acknowledging the power of the medicine music, you know, that it had this life unto itself. Yeah.
And I'm also feeling for me on my personal journey now, music comes more and more important. Hmm. I'm practicing a guitar right now.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
And the shaman drum and everything, and chanting a lot also in ceremonies. Yeah. So for me, it's a really clear path. Mm. Also in your ceremonies, always I have this feeling, okay, there are no words anymore. Mm-hmm. And we go in other realms of, I don't know, it
comes. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I feel that music is like bringing us there, and this like interconnectedness of music.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, we need a whole podcast just to talk about that. But one of the things that's really interesting that I'm aware of, when people ask me about the ayahuasca work and the ceremony, particularly, not so much the medicine, one of the things I came to realize during the course of the years, because I'm always studying, what are we doing really? Like, what's happening? Really, what's happening in ceremony more than anything else is that we're opening a conversation between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind. That's really what's happening. And one of the ways that's most effective to do that is through the music, right? In a lot of ways, the lyrics of the songs are meeting the intellect, right? They're meeting the mind, the conscious mind, and saying very familiar things that the mind can relate to. But what it's really doing is opening up this conversation with the subconscious mind. And then the more symbolic, archetypal things that don't need lyrics, right?
Yeah.
They can actually get in. Right. And that's why you'll hear me often, like in the ceremonies, you know, evoking all of the archetypes, you know, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, Krishna, Buddha, all of them. You know, it's not that I'm actually physically calling in these beings, right? It's what they do with our psyche, it's what they represent, right? And it's what kind of conversation and dialogue opens up when you're willing to like open up to it, basically, right? Yeah. So with the medicine music, particularly with the Joy album, I'm doing the same thing. You know, on one hand, all the songs are deceptively simple in that there is a on the surface, easily assimilated, like intellectual message happening with the lyrics. Yeah, but as you're listening, there's actually something that I'm really saying that is bypassing your intellect and going straight to the heart. Mm-hmm. That's the way I like to see it, or into the subconscious. So I'm always doing both, and I love working that way because it's natural for me.
Yeah. So you also do it for yourself? You have like a daily practice to working with music on yourself?
Sort of. You know, it was interesting. Like, it was like asking a dancer if they exercise. It's like, well, no, because I'm dancing all the time, right? You don't have to, like, do yoga classes, and because the training that a dancer gets, you're 24/7 in this world. So because music is like, it's in ceremony, you know, I'm writing music, you know, working with production and music, it's like a 24/7 just kind of the ocean that I swim in. Like, music is just second nature to me. There are times occasionally, though, you know, I just kind of feel like I need to sit down and actually improve my skills on the handpan, right? Or I have to play the drum just to kind of, you know, take my own technique to another level. But the music itself is just like it's almost like second language. Yeah, whenever I need it, I can call upon that, right? And it's just there. But at the same time, yeah, it's a lifelong practice too.
Yeah. How many instruments are you actually into?
You know, I'm a percussionist. I write music and sing. So my main instrument, of course, is vocalizing. But because the way I grew up, rhythm is second nature to me. So most of the time when I'm writing music, it's going to be on the handpan or a drum of some kind, because I'm always writing rhythmically. Yeah, the minute I hear a song, I'm one of those writers that I always hear the whole song at the same time. And I was surprised to find out that some writers don't. Some writers hear melody and then they get someone to write lyrics. Some writers just hear lyrics and then they have to put it to music. For me, the whole song happens at the same time. Yeah, I can hear what the music's doing, but more than anything, I can hear what the percussion is doing. Like, yeah, the rhythm is super important for me.
Yeah. Love it. So what's the view in the future right now also for you, for your work?
I don't know. One of the things I wanted to focus on in my time on the island here, Koh Phangan, was that question. The logical thing is, yes, I'm going to spend the next year finishing and promoting Joy. Yeah. There's music videos and other art forms related to that. And then we're already talking about what the next Bird Tribe album might sound like, you know. So I'm starting to, I'm in pre-production for like four of the songs, and there might only be four for whatever the next Bird Tribe album would be. But I'm also looking at, you know, like, this work is so central to my life, the ayahuasca work, and I love doing it. And some part of me also feels like I might want to take some time and just focus on the music for a while. And I don't know how that would look at this point. Because my whole life is centered around medicine work and I love doing it. Yeah. So I don't know what that's going to look like. Yeah. I would say I have the great luxury of not needing to be concerned about that because I love my life as it is. And there's no reason to think this is not going to continue. Right. But at the same time, I'm also in a very privileged position of being able to think about it, you know, and make some choices about what might be next, you know. And, you know, I use that word privilege because, getting back to grateful, as you've heard me say in ceremony, I think the answer to most of people's problems, so-called problems, is actually just gratitude, right? You bring yourself back to the awareness that most of the world's population would gladly trade places with you, right, and take on your problems, right? I think you start each day by doing that. It's like my spiritual practice at this point in my life is just looking at all times, particularly in the morning. You know, if you start with what you're grateful for, it shifts your consciousness from lack to what you have already, right? So you move from this overall awareness of what you don't have and what's wrong and what's lacking to starting your day with gratitude for what you already have in place, right? And everybody has something to be grateful for, you know? Yeah, and I feel like when you start from that place, you can certainly look at all the things that you want to accomplish and what's missing, but you're mostly focused on like, wow, I have so much already, right? So that's kind of what I feel. As I'm looking to the future, I feel like, you know, God, don't let me ask for another thing. It's so good already, right? But at the same time, it's like, there's more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's also like, the work is super important. And there's so much going on right now. And I think you're, one of the persons who are like trying to shift this world into a more peaceful world. But everything starts with inner peace.
Yeah, you know, I would say it's like the most important thing I could say about this work for me is that it's not spiritual work in the way that most people think about it. For me, it's a form of activism. You know, as I look at what's happening in the world, any mature person, I would say, would want to participate in some way. Like, how do I participate and help shift this consciousness? And for me, I just had the realization that although protesting and activism and all of that is very important, I don't want to make light of that, the real front lines is consciousness, right? It's shifting consciousness, expanding consciousness. And I just became aware, you know, at some point that, oh, this is the place where I can make the most difference. Like, this is an area that I'm familiar with, I'm comfortable with, and I'm good at it, you know, meaning I understand it and I know that I'm effective at it. So I decided, you know, this is how I'm going to make my contribution to humanity. It's going to be through helping to elevate consciousness of our species as a whole. So yeah, that's why I'm committed to the work. The part of that that is quote unquote spiritual, it's almost like a byproduct, right?
Yeah.
Like, because it's going to look different for each person, right? But just focused on helping people to heal. And when people ask me, what does that mean, heal? Well, in some cases, it's actual physical healing. Yeah. Most of the time, what you're talking about is healing from separation. And the symptoms of that, which are typically trauma, anxiety, and depression, sense of, this separation, you bring those things into balance and most other things start to take care of themselves, right? That sense of connection. I've never, ever had to say to anybody in a ceremony, what would make you happy is to be helping other people. They always get it by themselves. There's no point, right? I mean, ultimately, they realize once they kind of heal themselves, the natural thing they want to do, most people, I'd want to say 95%, is I need to figure out how it is I can participate and make a difference. I want to help other people. Like, that's natural for human beings. When you can heal whatever the wounds of separation are, we automatically want to unify and support other people. So I feel like a lot of times I'm just a catalyst for that.
And your music as well. So everyone who is now happy to hear you and to listen to the music through Spotify. And I pre-ordered the new album already.
Oh, great. I can't wait to finish it.
Yeah.
I mean, as we're here talking, my producer is home finishing it. Yeah, it's now in his hands.
so maybe just to wrap it up a little bit, to focus more now on the on entrepreneurs and on entrepreneurship.
Sure.
So what you can give advice maybe to them who want to make a difference as well with their entrepreneurial path or with their businesses, the people who they work with, collaborate. So is there a central advice you can give them to raise consciousness for them and for their business?
You know, it's really everything we've been talking about. I think all you have to do is move from a self-centered, personal consciousness. You know, I'm doing this business for me because I have goals that I want to meet, right? That's, of course, that's going to happen anyway. If you can expand that into, I am a member of a human race, I'm a member of a species, everything that I'm about to do will impact other people, either immediate people working for me, or it's going to have an impact on the environment and impact on the world. You can still do all those amazing things and meet your goals. But I can tell you from experience, from talking to a lot of people, the game gets way more interesting when you try to figure out how to accomplish all your goals by also thinking about environmental and social impact, right? Like, how will this affect other people? How can what it is, whatever game it is that I'm playing, and I think of business in that way, whatever it is that I want to accomplish, you know, instead of the bottom line just being productivity or profit, you know, that other bottom line has to be impact, right? Because then it gets way more fun. It's like, oh, we can do this and this and this, and at the same time, restore this forest, right? Okay. Or help these particular people. We can expand consciousness. You know, I can impact this area of conflict, whatever it is. Yeah, it's not that you're doing it because you're out of guilt, Yeah. It's because he realized, like, that's actually just a much more interesting game to be playing.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you for your presence.
Of course.
Thank you for your work as well and for the music. I'm really honored to sit with you here. And
yeah, me too, honestly. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe I want to just bring some final words so to close everything up. And first of all, where can the people connect with you?
Oh, so I very lazily maintain a website. It's just my name, tonymoss.me.
Yeah, I saw it. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just, I say lazily because it's not my main focus. But as I'm doing new things, whether it's a workshop or an album or a show of some kind, I always put things there. And then it links to whatever else is going on. So that's and you can also reach me through there. So anybody that has questions, oftentimes people will just contact me and say, I'm really interested in ayahuasca. Where do you recommend in South America? So I get a lot of questions like that. So that's the best way to contact me. And that's pretty much it. Final words, I feel like I've been saying it the entire time, that I think what everyone is looking for is right in front of their face, And that is that you're not separate, that you're not alone. Right. And when you start making choices and decisions in your life from a place of not only gratitude, but from the awareness of connectivity, the whole thing shifts. And I really believe, I'm an optimist in this sense that although we come out of a history of confrontation, human beings and trauma, at the same time, the entire game can shift tomorrow. Yeah. We just need scientists have looked at this, researchers. We only need a percentage of the people on the planet to shift into this consciousness we're talking about for the whole game to know to go in a different direction. So be one of those people.
Thank you for the time, for your presence.
Thank you.
And looking forward to meeting
you. Yeah. Thank you. Anytime.
How do you catch the speed of light? By traveling to the source of light. There you'll find the source of life. And this travel at the speed of light.